Right, welcome to Miss Marshall and Miss Lowry's podcast on the context of A Christmas Carol, Charles Dickens' novella, set in Victorian England. Now, the context means the social and historical background to the novel, and you're going to need to write about that in your essay, the essay part of your question.
Very important, yes, miss.
Yes, okay. And we are, guys, feeling very nervous about this. We feel like we're actually doing our speaking listening test, so bear with us. Okay. Miss Lowry.
Yeah, brilliant. So, as Miss Marshall said, the novella was set in the Victorian ages, so the 19th century to be specific, and it was written in 1843, which was the beginning of a period called the Hungry Forties. It was called this because of the potato famine in Ireland at the time. Well, of course, Ireland isn't far from England.
Okay.
And, you know, the effects were felt in England too. So people were very hungry, as suggested by the name, starving in fact. You know, didn't have enough money to feed themselves and their families. That's the poor people.
What was it like for the richer people?
Oh, well, they just had a fantastic time of it, throwing parties like Fred's all the time, you know. There was a massive divide, wasn't
there? Yeah, I think Benjamin Disraeli, the politician, said at the time that it was a country of two halves. There was the rich half and the poor half. So it was a time of inequality and injustice. And Charles Dickens felt very passionate about this, very angry about this, because he thought it was incredibly unfair. What happened to his father, Miss Lowry?
Well, yes, of course. His father was put in a debtor's jail. So, you know, like a jail that we have today, but 100 times worse.
Yes.
A million times worse, probably even. And he was put in there because he didn't pay his debts. And this was when Charles Dickens was 12. So a mere boy. He had to go out and work to support his own family, which would have been a very traumatising experience for him, and something that I don't think he ever forgot. He worked in a blacking factory, where he just was employed to fix labels onto bottles for 11 hours a day.
Oh my goodness.
Crikey.
Yeah, I think actually, unlike you guys, he was very cross that he had to stop going to school because he valued education hugely and actually enjoyed it. And when he had to stop and go to work, he felt this had had a terrible effect on his opportunities for the rest of his life. I think we see it in the Cratchits as well, don't we? Because Martha has to go out to work, and Bob also talks about finding Peter a job.
Yes, exactly. So, I mean, I think that probably Dickens could see, you know, his own family life from a big family. He had to support them. You know, he reflects that in the Cratchits. You know, a big family
without
lots
much
of mouths to feed and not much food to go around. But also there was a time in the novel with the charity workers that I think is quite significant here as well. Because he wasn't really Scrooge, this is now. Sorry, I've jumped a little bit. But the character of Scrooge wasn't really particularly willing to help at the beginning of the novel.
No, he's very dismissive, isn't he, when they come on Christmas Eve and ask him for some money. Can you remember what he actually says to them?
Something along the lines of, are there no workhouses? Are there no prisons? And he thinks that those workhouses and prisons are what is the system put in place to help the poor. You know, nothing to do with education there, just somewhere to put them.
Yeah, he was reflecting. Scrooge was reflecting this opinion among the richer members of society in Victorian England that actually people who were poor were lazy. And it was their own fault that they'd fallen on hard times, which, again, Charles Dickens felt was desperately unfair.
Yes.
Okay, he did want to make a change. Mm. So at first, he decided, he thought he was going to write a newspaper article about this, didn't he? But he changed his mind.
Yeah, he did change his mind. I think that he felt that a story or a novella might last a bit longer than a factual newspaper article that, you know, would be chip papers the next day if they had fish and chips. Probably not, they were so
only if they were rich.
Only if they were rich. And actually Charles Dickens was right, because we're still analysing and reading A Christmas Carol to this day, so you know that message is still coming across to students in the classroom you know, nowadays.
Should we talk about education?
Yes.
And Charles Dickens' view on education? What did he think of it?
Well, he thought it was really important. Really, really important. He said, in fact, that the right to learn is comparable to the need to eat. So, you know, he thought that learning was as important as food, which, you know, may seem crazy to some of you. But his sort of thinking was that social chaos would erupt if people weren't educated, or, you know, if they couldn't get a job, then actually that's no good for all of society. And of course this does link to a part of the novel, doesn't it, Miss?
Yeah. The end of the Ghost of Christmas Present, his stay on Earth, he reveals to Scrooge ignorance and want, the two children underneath his cloak. And if you remember, he says that ignorance is the more dangerous of the two.
Mm.
And again, this reflected his ideas that education was incredibly important, not only to individuals, but to society as a whole. OK, there's another important tradition that Charles Dickens is credited with developing in A Christmas Carol. And it is actually the celebrations surrounding Christmas that we still follow today.
Yeah, so there's Fred's party.
Yeah.
That's a fantastic example of celebration and merriment at Christmas
time. Yeah, can you remember the games that they play?
Oh, yes.
Blind man's buff, and there's a funny guessing game, isn't there? I can't remember. What's it called? The questions game,
yes.
Where they take the mickey out of Scrooge.
Yes.
But if you remember that...
He's seeing, of course, isn't he, with the Ghost of Christmas Present.
Yes, and he can't take part, but he desperately wants to.
Yes.
So this idea of like getting together and celebrating games with your friends and your family, and the sort of infectious nature of that is conveyed in that part. And then, of course, there's Fezziwig.
Yes.
Giving a different view of a boss.
Yeah, much different than Scrooge. You know, they're polar opposites in terms of the way that they... you know, treat their staff, really. And Fezziwig was Scrooge's boss previously, so, you know, it seems as though he hasn't learnt a lot from his boss. But then when he sees Fezziwig's parties, he's reminded by the Ghost of Christmas Past, he realises, you know, actually those were fun times. Those were, you know, that's perhaps how it should be, a little bit more.
Yeah, and his descriptions of the shared family meals, even the Cratchits, although there isn't much there, and they have a very small goose and a very small pudding. Again, that was to become part of the traditional celebration of Christmas that we still follow today. So moving on to our final section, the Gothic.
The
Gothic and the supernatural.
Well, I mean, there are plenty of Gothic features in the novella. Miss, when do you think we first get a taste of this?
I think it's when Scrooge is going back to his chambers or his apartments at the end of Christmas Eve, and he goes to put his hand on the door knocker and it turns into the face of Jacob Marley.
Mm.
And then he steps inside. Can you remember what happens inside?
Oh, yes, and he thinks that he can hear the hearse coming up the stairs, and there's the bell chiming from the local church, nearby church as well, which gives us a really eerie feeling as readers. And of course the chains on Marley's ghost. So, I mean, you know, that's obviously a very clear Gothic character, Marley's ghost. So, yeah, the chains on him clanging and clanking up the stairs.
Yeah, the whole idea of ghosts, and of course there are three other ghosts that visit him during the story, are linked to Gothic novels and literature, which was hugely popular at the time.
Mm.
The Victorians were very fascinated by the supernatural, partly because they were surrounded by death. Lots of their children died when they were very young due to poor healthcare and poor living conditions.
Mm.
And they were fascinated with the idea that death wasn't the end.
I suppose a bit like Tiny Tim.
Yes.
You know, a child who, you know, didn't die in the end, but was very close to. And, you know,
yeah.
Scrooge didn't, in the end, actually want to see that happening to Bob Cratchit's
yeah.
son.
His intervention was critical, wasn't it? Without help and without money, then Tiny Tim would have died.
And speaking of the conditions, I mean, the weather in the novella is very interesting as well and links into the Gothic.
Yeah, especially at the start, doesn't it?
Mm, so Gothic genre.
If you remember, it's very cold and it's dark when he's going back to his chambers before he sees Jacob Marley.
Not a lot of coal for the fire. Bob Cratchit is in very cold conditions, and Scrooge keeps the coal for himself. Yes. Oh, and also the icy imagery as well. So we often say that this could actually symbolise Scrooge's heart at the beginning of the novella.
Yeah.
So cold and icy.
Yes. Yes. His personality does match the surroundings and the weather. And again, those were very much part of Gothic novels, which were popular at the time.
Mm.
Okay.
Which, of course, as well... Oh, sorry, miss, for interrupting. I was just going to say, actually, just, you know, the contrast to the Cratchit family, actually, when you think about it, how, you know, how cold Scrooge is at the start, but then how warm and welcoming the Cratchits are. I'm Fred.
Yeah, I'm Fred. Yeah. Okay. I think we're done now, are we, miss?
I think we are.
Okay.
Hope you've learnt something.
Yeah. We've learnt we don't like doing this.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.